Hey everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today I am joined by my friend Kat from The Creative Introvert and katroseastrology.com. Kat is a friend, a colleague, and someone who helps me out with my social media and website. She is multi-talented and wonderful. So glad to have you here again for our Q&A series, Kat. What kinds of questions from the audience are we fielding today?
Well, today we've got some big meaty ones that talk about fate or karma, and whether or not it's something that can improve, and looking at astrology potentially to give us a way to look at that. So I guess that should be the first question. Can our fate improve? And if so, can you see anything in a birth chart that would tell us that maybe some challenging fate or karma would improve?
Right. Yeah, those are, I feel like astrologers have been debating those topics really for like thousands of years. And so some of answering this question might be about just giving you the lay of the land in terms of what the discussion is. And then part of it would be maybe my own answer to the question. So the lay of the land is that, you have different schools of astrology throughout its history that are going to be more or less deterministic when it comes to fate. So for example, ancient Stoics were pretty set that the universe, there's a kind of deterministic fatedness to the universe, but that as we each contain the divine essence within us, we can train the mind to be free and the spirit, in a sense, to be free despite the kind of mechanical flow of energy in the universe. So there's a law-bound fatedness to the universe, but you can cultivate some sense of freedom within it. It's not bound up in getting different results. It's bound up in changing your relationship with results, because you are you contain the same divine essence that is the intelligence behind all of it, or something like that. So that's one school. Then you have other schools that are more about intersections between fate and free will, kind of an intersectionality between fate and free will, and schools that lean more heavily in the direction of everything being pretty wide open, especially more modern schools of astrology. So, you know, there's always been a lot of conversation about this. Because I study Bhakti Yoga, and I'm really interested in yoga philosophy and the intersection of yoga philosophy and like Platonism and Neoplatonism and stuff like that, Hermeticism with astrology, my own view tends to be in alignment with those schools. So for example, in yoga philosophy, similar to strains of Platonism and Neoplatonism and stuff, the analogy that's often used is like, if you think about your life like a garden, in that garden, imagine that the garden has a 50,000 year history, right? So there's stuff that's growing in the garden, perennials that come up around certain times, weeds that keep coming up, whatever. And in a sense, you have the power through your free will to change what's growing in the garden. You can rip things out by their roots, you know, and cast them aside and say, you know, no more. But only those things that are not so deeply rooted yet, or that maybe like certain karmas, they're going to blossom in this lifetime. And, you know, you can't just grab them and uproot them simply because there's a desire to do so. They have too much force and momentum karmically behind them. So for example, most birth charts are going to display some sense of fatedness around certain topics that I can predict very easily. And every day I do so. That lends itself to the idea that you can't just change anything, that there's certain patterns that are going to play out and certain events and results that are going to happen. And even if you had all the awareness and intention to change them in the world, they may just have too much momentum and force behind them. For example, if I roll a ball very slowly toward the wall, I could get up, run, and get it before it touches the wall. If I huck a baseball at a window, I can't catch up with it fast enough before it smashes the window. So karma is like that too, where in a sense, everything we've created from this perspective has been created by our own choices in previous lives. And the momentum of some of those choices, the deepness of certain patterns is such that the baseball is going to break the window. There's going to be fated events that we don't have enough strength in, because it's like you've smoked cigarettes for 20 years, you know, just because you go one day, you say, I shouldn't be smoking. Most people, not everyone, but most people will have to go through a process before they can quit. It doesn't happen just because you realize I want it to change. The same amount of work that went into creating a pattern will, in a sense, have to be put in to change the pattern. So one, that's the karmic science that I'm really attracted to in yoga philosophy, which is like, okay, there's karma and it can be changed, but a lot of patterns are really deeply rooted and can't be changed like instantly or overnight. And the hard part is that in looking at a birth chart, what you're seeing is the landscape of that garden and all the karma that's growing in it. Some of which you can change maybe quickly. Some of which is not going to change quickly at all. Some of which may change more intermediately. For example, maybe you smoke for 5 years, you start getting sick and it takes you a year to quit, but you do. You know, so some things are sort of middling where it's like, it'll have a hold of you for a while. It'll take a little work, but then you'll change it. So there's different gradations of it like that. And the point is that we can always put in effort to change things, but we have to understand that in looking at the birth chart, it's going to be very difficult for most of us who are largely missing probably a lot of the nuances of that analytical skill that like ancient Indian astrologers might've had. To be able to tell which kind of karma is it, how intractable or malleable is it, how long do such karmas tend to change, when do you see them breaking open or something like that. So in light of the fact that we don't necessarily have that level of skill, most of us as astrologers, we have to say, well, anything in the birth chart is capable of being changed, but also we can't expect that everything will change just because we want it to. And I think you just kind of have to take that mindset, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah. And following that garden analogy, and maybe this is going to be screwing with it too much, but seeds, like you can expect some seeds to grow into a certain plant. This is embarrassing because I don't know the details, but you can't, let's say they can be different colors. Is that what it's like? So it's, you know what plant it's going to be, but you just don't know what color the flower will be, let's say. Yeah. Is that kind of like, if you have a certain planetary placement and, you know, reading for somebody as an astrologer, and I know you do this, you'll give somebody maybe a range of options of from maybe difficult to less difficult that karma could be expressing itself through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And do you think that's within our conscious, you know, free choice? Like if I've got a messed up Venus, like it might not be as bad as the worst version of that, depending on how actively I approach it, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think that's, on one level, I think that's precisely it. It's like, as an astrologer, I'm sitting there, let's see, I say that I see Mars in your seventh house. And I'm thinking, well, maybe this person marries someone who abuses them. Maybe this person marries an entrepreneur or an athlete, or maybe this person just has a pattern of enjoying competition with other people. Any of those would be expressions of the Mars in the seventh karma, but I don't know which one exactly it's going to be. And I don't know also how flexible that karma is when it comes to what the native's free will sent from birth forward, what influence it will have over how it expresses itself. Because it could be that that Mars in the seventh is indicating an intractable karma when it comes to abusive relationships, that this person is not just going to, and how many nice people are there in the world that aren't like purposefully attracting someone abusive into their life, but the karma shows up anyway. So it's not like, oh yeah, well, you were cruising for a bruising. It's like, well, we don't know where that karma comes from or why it's there exactly. And so it's not like you can preemptively change something that you're not even necessarily consciously attracting, if that makes sense. or consciously determining for yourself or something. So I'm a little hesitant to say that we offer a range of possibilities because it's totally up to the native to sort of decide what that will be. It's more like, we don't know. There's the possibility that they will sort of shape that. And there's also the possibility that, of how it actually expresses itself. And there's also the possibility that the fatedness of that placement has some variance in terms of how it could express itself. So we have to cast a wide net when delineating Mars in the seventh house so that we can accommodate free will and the range of ways in which the fatedness could express itself, both equally.
Yeah, it would be maybe putting too much pressure on an individual to say, well, now it's up to you to, like, you know, escape all those people and go and find some like martial artist, you know. It might be too hard. And this is a question that I don't expect necessarily you to have an answer to, but like, maybe can you see how much free will, free choice somebody has to change? As in, when you're reading for somebody and you're talking to them, does it come through that, all right, this person has, I don't know, like done the work in previous lifetimes, however you want to put it, that is clearly taking effect on their chart, that what would look like a really difficult setup is manifesting in a, I guess, a more subjectively pleasant way? Is that something that you can see?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I feel like the... I guess it's a yes and no. In some ways, it's like, if you talk to enough people, you get a sense and you hear their stories and you hear, for example, if I hear that this person has Mars in the seventh and they've gone through one marriage that was awful, but they've been married since 15 years in a relationship that's very different. And let's say I also look and I notice that Mars is in a double-bodied sign in the seventh house. Some indicators technically in astrology will give you a sense that the karma can change. For example, Mars in a fixed sign in the seventh house or a solid sign might be more intractable. It might tend to endure or repeat in similar ways. Whereas Mars in a double-bodied sign in the seventh may indicate more changeability around the expression of Mars. And ancient astrologers noted this kind of thing. And I know that in Indian astrology, there's also a highly developed way of looking at how fields of karma may change. We also have things like progressions, transits, zodiacal releasing, the Hindu dasha system. There's tons of timing techniques that are used to look at how the same karma may express itself slightly differently depending on the context of different periods of life. So that's always there. but also, I think, so you can look at the chart and technically get a sense of, okay, maybe there's some changeability that I can see in the chart. But the thing that gives it away to me the most is when you're talking to someone and it's clear that they are, they're cultivating, I will just broadly call it an inner life, and they are pursuing virtue for its own sake. They're not concerned with changing their karma per se, but their karma is changing because they are trying to embody the best version of themselves. It's almost always that the karma improves, and I see this over and over again, as the natural byproduct of people who are just trying to be kinder, more compassionate, charitable, patient, humble, good people, confident, but gentle. You know, all of these qualities that you meet in the people that you never forget, that have an impact on you, teachers, mentors, friends, confidants, counselors, whatever, the people, and they have some qualities, not perfect, but they have qualities that make you think, I'm capable of that too. And then you just want to develop them. And you try, and you keep trying. To my mind, those people seem to have the best luck when it comes to seeing intractable, challenging karma in their lives change, or at least their relationship to it, which means it expresses itself in the same way at times, but they're not suffering the result that they might have earlier, because there's a sense of acceptance and there's some sense that everything is useful for the cultivation of my inner life. And so there's existential intimacy with challenging things that's not there in the charts, or let's say in the lives of people, I should say, that are merely or more superficially interested in getting a different result. It's a subtle distinction, because results are changing. It's not that they aren't. Often they are, but it's how they're changing. They're changing because of what a person is focused on. And it's almost, I'm almost always like, oh, I'm not worried about that difficult placement in your chart and this transit coming to it as much, because when I hear you speak or hear what you're doing with your life, I can tell that what you're really interested in is the heart and soul. And it's like, you can just feel when people are like that. And I think a lot of people are like that. And then that's why I think that's how, at least I see them starting to change things, some of the hardness of certain placements.
Yeah. So the focus is less about the manifestation of like that particular challenging planet, let's say the Mars in the seventh house. It's how that person is meeting. And like you said, two different people could have the same experiences, but the way they meet it, that's the magic. That's the thing that's changing. That's what we're going for, in a way. Yep. And it's just a reminder that astrology isn't here for us just to freak out about. It's, you know, that's not its point. There are more gifts. So one of the things, so you mentioned like a bunch of different ways of seeing somebody's like karma changing, zodiacal releasing, and all of these other more advanced techniques. But what about just transits in terms of, you know, like you do every month with our monthly forecasts? Are there certain like significant transits that people can look out for that might suggest something is changing for them personally when that transit hits that chart?
Yeah. So there's, again, two levels at which I talk about this, for example, in my year two program, when we talk about transits and karma. All this comes from the Indian take on karma. So anytime that the natal karma in your, basically not everything in your chart is active all of the time. So your Mars in the seventh isn't like, you know, pounding the door down every day, expressing itself. It may express itself at certain key moments or during certain key seasons of your life. And otherwise at times it's dormant, in the same way that perennials spring up and show their colors for a while and then they disappear again. So our karma in our charts is like that too. And so timing techniques are basically used to see at what seasons of life is the karma of the different areas of our chart going to express itself. So it's really helpful as an astrologer when you're talking to someone and you want to get a sense of how an upcoming transit is going to manifest, what kind of karma will show itself, and maybe some advice about how to meet it, to look back at other periods previously when the same karma was active, maybe even two or three of them, to get a feel for what happened then and how did you meet it. Because then it's like, you know, that you're sort of going through the same testing ground, you know? And I think that can be really helpful. And that's maybe when astrology is at its best, is helping us understand the season that's upcoming, rooted in the similar seasons we've had in the past and how we handled them. And the hope is that by growing and maturing, you know, in our character, we can, you know, do better with challenging transits in the future or whatever. But no one's ever really worried about the good ones, you know? So there's that level of it. And then there's also, so you're on the one hand, you have this sense of what's going to come and how I've handled it in the past and so forth. Anytime though, that you have a transit coming up and a karma in the birth chart means a karma in the birth chart is going to spring up and blossom again from birth. The promised karma of, say, marriage is going to show itself again when you're receiving transits to that house, to the ruler of that house, et cetera, or to a planet that rules the topics that are similar to that house, like Venus in the seventh. So, you know, love is probably going to show up. Okay. So, again, the second level of this is that every single time that any karma is active and you are cultivating an inner life for its own sake, you're 10 times more likely to experience that transit as a liberating one that changes a difficult pattern because you are going to be responding to it so much more constructively, intuitively, understanding it as a teacher. It's not something that's happening to me. So the transits are always delivering results, outcomes. The ancient science was called apotelesmatics, right? The study of outcomes. So every transit is going to deliver outcomes. If you have an inner life, then every outcome becomes an opportunity to change the sequence of events such that different outcomes come in the future. But you don't have that chance at all if you're only invested in the outcome level of the karma. That's the place where you're always just going to be reacting. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Do you have any, I guess, this is just making me think, like, I can imagine you going through this like really difficult transit and, you know, you're sitting there meditating, praying, like what kind of tips do you have, if any, to share with us if we're going through a challenging transit, any way to kind of study the soul?
Yeah. I mean, I think it helps to have friends who you can talk to, whether it's a counselor, a therapist, a best friend, a lover, having people in your life who try to handle life's ups and downs with dignity and with introspection, and being able to talk to people like that is key. Don't be alone for it. You know, maybe you talk to an astrologer, but I don't even think that's so important. You know, talking to a friend at a coffee shop who has empathy, you know, that kind of thing. I think it's really basic. It's like, be around people who care and want to see you thrive in the seasons of life, and surround yourself with them when you're going through it. That's probably the number one thing. Having a spiritual practice, of course, is good, but if it's not paired with some social relational dimension, then it's like, what am I, some ninja trying to, you know, master life? You know, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's like an inner life paired with being around people who love you, who care about you. You know, I think that combination is where it's at. But then, you know, I guess I would say, prayer is deeply underrated. Like, one of the things that I think about all the time, and I was mentioning this to my wife last night, we were talking about prayer and things that we've been praying about and stuff. And first of all, change the paradigm. Don't think of prayer to some authority in the sky. Think about it more as communion with the universe, communion with the same presence that lives in you and in all things, you know? The beauty that's behind all things, something like that. Think about it a little differently first. And then when you pray, I think about it like this. If you're trying to remember the lyrics to a song and you're like, I just can't remember them, you know, a lot of us will have the experience of going like, well, you know, I know if I stop thinking about it and trying to recall it, that in like 3 hours, I'm going to remember the lyrics. And sure enough, 3 hours later, oh my gosh, I remember those song lyrics. In my case, it'd still be messed up, but at least I'd remember the messed up version of them. But then prayer is like that too. If you sit and pray, not in petition for something, but in terms of seeking guidance, like let's say you're in a difficult transit and you're saying, I don't know what to do. I'm hurting. I'm confused. I don't know what the best path is, or, you know, whatever. And you just kind of say, help. You know, help, give me the insight, give me a sense of how to orient my compass. Teach me to do what's wise and good in this situation. That's for the highest good of others. It's for my own best good. If you pray for guidance when you're feeling stuck or in a difficult patch persistently, but just, and then just offer up the prayer and literally like you're trying to remember song lyrics, just forget trying to do anything about it. It's amazing how, to me, very quickly and naturally, the answers to prayer come. They come in signs and omens. They come in dreams. They come in people. They come in emails. They show up and they give us a sense of what comes next, or here's an illuminating insight. Here's what to do. And to me, that's the power of prayer. It's about calling on the cooperative intelligence of the universe and being like, hey, I can't do this alone. It's got to be cooperative gameplay here. And if you trust that and then trust giving it some space and time to respond and don't get too urgent and anxious about having to control and figure it out, then it's like answers and resources just start coming. And that it requires a certain level of faith and surrender. But to me, that's the best. If there's any way of dealing with difficult transits or seasons of karma and also changing your karma, that, to me, that's the most basic practice. But I'd put 1B right next to it. Surround yourself with people who can also, the universe can use to help you, which are, you know, good-hearted people.
That's really solid advice. Thank you. I think that's, yeah, very comforting as well, considering we're talking about some difficult stuff. So
yeah.
I think those are all the questions I've got on that now.
Excellent. Well, I want you all to check out Kat's work, which you can find at katroseastrology.com. She's got natal consults. You can study. She's going to have new classes coming up. She's got a great book on discovering the daimon in your birth chart. She's got a YouTube channel. Be sure that you check out her work. Glad to have you here to help us with our Q&A session. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Take it easy, everyone.